HIV services and treatment. As most of you who have been working around issues of migration or mobility and HIV would know, that migration and its the conditions around migration contributes to the vulnerability faced by migrant workers everywhere. And you've probably heard several sessions around that issue already. So today we will look deeper into this issue and look at what happens when migrant workers become positive of HIV and see the situation in terms of how they're able to access or not access services in the country of destination where they get tested or when they get home after they are deported. For this afternoon, we are lucky to have been able to assemble a panel of experts who will talk about different issues around access of HIV-positive migrants to healthcare services, as well as the restrictions that are imposed on migrants in different phases of migration. So let's start with the first speaker. Beside me here is Mr. Peter Wiesner. Did I pronounce that correctly? Okay, he's from Germany. He has a diploma in social science, particularly in politics and sociology. He is a member of the European AIDS Treatment Group and is a freelancer connected with the Deutsche AIDS Hilfe. And one of his biggest contributions, I would say, is putting out 9 editions of the quick reference booklet on HIV-specific travel restrictions. I'm sure a lot of you have seen that. I particularly have used that reference in a lot of my research. In 2008, he was a member of the International Task Team on HIV-related travel restrictions and is one of the authors of the global database on HIV-specific travel restrictions, which is found at www.hivrestrictions.org. Peter?
Thank you. I'm going to give here an overview of restrictions related to HIV entry and residence and human rights violations. I did this presentation together with my colleague Karl Lemmen. Actually, Karl should be here, but he couldn't make it, so I'm going to present. You see here a map, and all those countries in red, they have restrictions in place. The countries you see in orange, we have there is only contradictory information, and we cannot say if they have restrictions, yes or no. The countries in green, they don't have restrictions. There is a guide, a booklet. You can see that, or you can have that outside at the table. Before I start the presentation, I would just read this story, a personal testimony. This was an email I've got. Sorry, Peter, for bothering you. I'm a 25-year-old male, and I'm HIV positive. I'm holder of both public China and Hong Kong passport. I now have a job offer in Australia, which will not only enhance my personal and career development, but also fulfill a long-held dream. But as Australian government requires a medical examination, I'm afraid of being denied a working visa. However, I believe that Australia is a democracy. Such things should not happen. Another concern, will the government disclose my HIV conditions to my would-be employer? Still, I believe, as a democracy, its national and state government will keep such sensitive information confidential, right? I'm recently too busy with my new job and could hardly spare time to ask people, including those in the Australian government. Feeling so sad, as I'm only 25 years old and should be deprived of some right due to the virus, which when I got an opportunity knocks at my door and I really want it. I myself strongly believe I can contribute a lot to my would-be employer. I would definitely feel guilty when I'm refused a visa. Peter, thanks for your time, and if you cannot answer, at least point out the right direction. To whom should I turn to help? So I ask you, to whom would you turn to help in such a position? Who would provide information about the Australian situation? Is it advisable to go in contact with Australian authorities directly? Would you discuss it with your future employee? Would you lie? And if you fail, what would be the consequences? So what advice would you give to circumvent the restrictions in Australia? Would the authorities deport you if they find out about your HIV status? And if your visa would get denied, would you be able to apply a second time? Would they give you a second chance? What would be your answer? Just two words about our experience on the topics. So the Deutsche AIDS-Hilfe did start doing community-driven research in 1999. So we did get in contact with all embassies, all German embassies around, and asked them, confronted them with a questionnaire. So we gathered data on HIV-specific entry and residence regulations worldwide. The questionnaire we sent out did raise the question if there are specific regulations on entry and residence, if there is an HIV test that need to get carried out, what are the rules of controlling and supporting people living with HIV and AIDS, and would it be possible to import HIV medication for private use? We distributed this information since 1999. We came up with a guide called Quick Reference. We have 9 editions by now. We have 10 translations into languages, and we created this database. I personally was a member of the UNAIDS task team to remove these restrictions. So these are the results of our work. We have currently 66 countries with restrictions worldwide. There are 25 countries where we have contradictory information, so we simply don't know whether there are restrictions, yes or no. There are 8 countries worldwide where we don't have any information at all. We have 31 countries that deport people living with HIV and AIDS, and we have 119 countries without any restrictions at all. So what is the impact for mobile populations in light of this sort of regulations? You have, of course, health-related questions included in the visa application form. You have to come up with a health certificate if you ask for a work visa or for a study permit, and the HIV test is mandatory. You might have a medical examination. There might be a mandatory test at border before or after entry, and if you are in the country on a regular basis each year, and recruitment agencies might require HIV tests. So these are the evil countries, I would say. So there are 15 countries worldwide that categorically refuse entry of people living with HIV and AIDS, and this entails short-term visits. There are 19 countries that deny visa for short-term stays, and there are 15 European countries with restrictions. And we try to lobby in the forefront of this conference to revise these restrictions, but we didn't succeed. There are deportations in 31 countries. I don't go through this because there was a presentation this morning. What are the limitations of rights? This applies for people living with AIDS, HIV and AIDS, and it limits, of course, the right to privacy. So the voluntary counseling and testing standards are completely neglected. There is forced disclosure, and this does have devastating emotional and financial impact, especially if those people have to do lose their jobs. There is no information about tests taken, about treatment options, if the test is taken. And this has, of course, negative impact on doctor-patient relationships. So would you trust your physician if he takes a mandatory test, if he doesn't explain anything? Of course not. This violates the right to health. It has often been mentioned that mandatory HIV testing drives people underground, so they will very likely not go in contact with the health system if tests are carrying out in order to exclude people. There are double standards. Access to healthcare services is always linked, this is in Europe the case, and in many other countries to residency status, and this should not be the case. migrants don't have benefit of insurances, so I just wonder why it's not possible to combine migrant work with access to health insurance, as it is the case in for any other people who work in my country, Germany. It limits the right to life. Deportation might be and could be and very often is a death sentence for the people who suffer under this. It limits, of course, the freedom of movement. So people living with HIV and AIDS have limited choices to get residency permits, to work, to study, to make a living, to unite with families, or to participate, for example, at conferences. And we know that there's no public health rationale for doing this. There's no public health rationale for restricting liberty of movement or choice of residence on the grounds of HIV status. So this is a quote of our friend Susan Dimberlake. All this demonstrates that there are very queer perceptions of people living with HIV and AIDS and those infected. So they say that people living with HIV, they should go outside our country because they behave irresponsibly, they are a danger to public health, they have a short life expectancy and can't sufficiently contribute to society and are a burden of the healthcare budget. And related to HIV, it tells you that HIV is a foreign problem that can't get controlled at borders. And I simply ask you, is this reality? Does this reflect the reality in 2010? Of course not. Everybody knows that. So what should the community do? What should be our response to work on that? I think, first of all, the HIV community came out with the GIPA principle, the greater involvement of people living with HIV and AIDS. And we have to say that these principles are violated by these sort of restrictions. So we have to state that people living with HIV contribute to society. We have to say that conferences shouldn't take place in countries where the right of the people living with HIV and AIDS is not respected. And we have to integrate people in service planning and delivery. And we should not use HIV testing as a weapon. We have to respect voluntary countering and testing standards. This applies for migrants much more than to anybody else. We should fight against HIV screening designed to exclude or stigmatize. This is the last slide. I think the fight for universal access starts here. It doesn't start in Africa or in Asia. It starts in every single country. And universal access to me means that migrant workers should be integrated and should have access to any service that anybody else. So this is more or less the key message. And the other message would be that restrictions fuel stigma and criminalize people living with HIV and AIDS. So there should be more cooperation between sending and receiving countries, but we hear more about this later, and we should raise awareness. And you should, if you have examples from your country, you should send it to us and we can distribute it. Just acknowledgement to those people who have been involved in the fight to remove these restrictions and to spread the information. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. May I request the audience that if you have questions, we'll entertain them after all the speakers have done their presentations. For the next speaker, Mr. Romel Franco Legues from the Philippines. He is a member of Pinoy Plus Association, an organization of people living with HIV in the Philippines. He has also been involved in activities of this organization, including providing care and support to other people living with HIV, as well as conducting research for the organization. He is also a volunteer health advocate of Action for Health Initiatives. That's my organization. So, Romel?
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Romel Legues, a former Filipino migrant worker, and I work in Jeddah, in Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, as a private waiter at King Palace for the 10 months. All my dreams were crushed when I was diagnosed with HIV. Today, I will share my personal experiences as well as experiences for other migrant workers who were detained for deported due to HIV. First, I want to talk about some of the things that make migrant workers vulnerable to HIV infection. One of the reasons why migrant workers are vulnerable to HIV is a lack of information and awareness on HIV and AIDS. Filipino migrant workers are required to undergo pre-departure orientation on seminar, or PDOS. Unfortunately, migrant workers are too anxious and eager to work abroad to listen. Also, the time provided for the HIV orientation seminar is not enough for migrant workers to understand all the important details about HIV. When I attended PDOS, there was no information about HIV. All I know about HIV and AIDS came from television program. Still, this was not enough to protect myself. Aside from that, we're not given any reading materials or nor were given any opportunity to learn about HIV and other diseases in the receiving country. Being away from our family, friends, and intimate partners, migrant workers often look for a way to cope with loneliness and homesickness. Many migrant workers have a relationship with migrant workers in the receiving country. I had a relationship with a fellow Filipino, and this helped to ease my homesickness. Others who engage in intimate relationship often do so as means to have additional money. These kinds of a relationship help to other migrant workers to send more money to their loved ones left at the sending countries. Because of lack of awareness, many migrant workers do not realize the risks involved when engaging in unprotected sex, but sometimes those who are aware about using condoms to prevent HIV find it difficult to avail of condom because of the restrictive culture in the receiving country. In Saudi, I have not seen any stores that sells condoms. I engaged in paid sex while I was in Saudi Arabia because sex work is criminalized in the country. These activities are always done very discreetly, and this also contributes to my difficulty in accessing information and commodities to protect myself from HIV. There are migrant workers who engage in sex with their partners but do not use condom because they believe that their relationship is exclusive. Migrant workers fall in love and put their trust in their partners. But unfortunately, this love and trust are given a reason why they choose not to use condom, and sometimes they make them vulnerable to HIV infection. Also, I know some Filipino migrant workers were raped by their employers and some random acquaintances. In these incidents, migrant workers have no chance of using condom to protect themselves. When working abroad, one of the most difficult barriers to overcome is the language barrier. I cannot avail of services or information because I cannot speak their language. Furthermore, because of the differences in culture, I was not sure it would be acceptable to talk about sex or sexuality or HIV. To tap this, many of us are not aware of where we can access this kind of services in this destination country. Everyone knows that HIV test is a mandatory for migrant workers. We had to undergo the test every time we renew our work permits. When I underwent a medical test to renew my ICAMA or work permit, I was not aware that they also tested for me for HIV. There was no counseling before and after the test. My medical test result was directly given to my employer. I only found out my result after 2 weeks. The lead assistant of the king told me that I needed to go back to the hospital. I was accompanied by two of the king staff. In the car, another car was tailing us to the hospital. At the hospital, the doctors told me that I was HIV positive. I asked the doctors to give me the result of my test, but she did not give me my test result. She just told me that I was lucky because I was brought to hospital and not the prison. I was detained in a small room in the hospital for 2 weeks. I did not feel lucky at all. In other countries, migrant workers who were diagnosed with HIV are locked up in their dormitory by their employers or recruitment agents. While they wait for their documents to be proceed for deportation, like me, Other migrant workers we also detain without seeing the result of their medical tests. The right of the patient is violated since it's standard procedures in other countries that results of a medical test is forwarded directly to employer. Counseling is very important in coping with the stress of knowing that you are HIV positive. When the doctors told me my status, I was hysterical. I was crying not because of my status, but because I was told that I would not be able to work anymore because I am HIV positive. But there was no counseling services in the hospital where I was detained. While in detention, I was not given a chance to get my things from my place of my employment. My employer did not contact me. Migrant workers who were determined due to their status have no opportunity to get their benefits such as a separation fee or health benefits from their employers while in detention. I had no access to legal and social support. I was deported after being detained for 2 weeks. On my way to the airport, I was again accompanied by two policemen. They made sure that I boarded the plane going back to the Philippines. Another migrant worker from Riyadh was handcuffed on his way to the airport. He was the first to board the plane. I, on the other hand, entered the plane from the back where the luggage was placed. My partners got my things from my employer, but there are migrant workers who were not given the chance to collect their personal belongings. Other migrant workers may have experienced more difficult challenges. Certainly, conditions faced by migrant workers who face detention and deportation due to their HIV status make it very difficult to access services. The situation can even lead to death because there is much concern for migrant workers who are diagnosed with HIV in many detention countries. It was really hard for me to go through all of this. I went to work abroad in the hopes of providing up for my family. Instead, I got infected and my rights were violated. It is important to emphasize that HIV positive migrant workers are not criminals. In the present reality, where the mandatory testing is related to deportation imposed on migrant workers, I recommend the following interim measures. Ensure the current repatriation practices of migrants are more humane. Migrant workers can be referred to their embassies, consulates, so they can be assisted and properly referred to service provider back home. And while migrants have to be detained while waiting on repatriation, I recommend the health services should be made able and accessible for them. This should include counseling services and treatment for opportunistic infection. However, we need to eventually move beyond these short-term measures to ensure the right of migrant worker. For this, I would like to call on the government of destination country to remove all the mandatory HIV testing and practices. This is the human right violation. Being HIV positive should not be a ground for termination from employment. We should not be detained. We should not be deported. People living with HIV are human beings with the same set of rights and responsibilities. We still have the right to work, right to free from stigma and discrimination, the right to life. Let us embrace this right right here, right now. I hope my presentation gives you an idea of what we undergo when we are detained. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Rommel, for sharing a part of your life with us. Now on to the next speaker. To my right, far right, is Mr. Shakirul Islam from Bangladesh. He has been working on the issues of migrant workers since 2004. And as a migrant himself, he has put up an organization of migrant workers called Migrant Workers Development Program in Bangladesh. He has done a lot of research in the areas of vulnerability to HIV and access to health of migrant workers in Bangladesh. So, Shakil.
Honorable Chair of the Session, distinguished speakers on the table, and ladies and gentlemen, Assalamu alaikum and good afternoon. In the context of South Asia, there are two forms of migration. One is cross-border migration within South Asia, and the other form is labor migration that usually happens from low-income South Asian countries to high-income countries, particularly in the Arab states. If I talk about cross-border migration, it is a reality in the context of subcontinent in South Asia. Cross-border migration happens particularly between Bangladesh and India on one hand, and between Nepal and India on the other. The ground reality regarding cross-border migration between Bangladesh and India is that it is not officially recognized due to political reasons. Therefore, there is hardly official data regards to cross-border migration between Bangladesh and India. And for the same reason, there is hardly scope of responses to address the issues, particularly HIV/AIDS in Bangladesh context. Since there is lack of data regarding cross-border migration on one hand, and since I am representing a migrant association, I do like talking about more about HIV vulnerabilities to external labor migrants and their challenges to get access to HIV services. Let's talk about flow of labor migration from South Asia. Labor migration is a livelihood option and a factor of development in many Asian countries, including South Asia. Present data show that more than 30 million people from South Asian region left their homeland in search of employment overseas. Among those, the official numbers of overseas migrant workers from Bangladesh made a figure of 6.7 million during 1976 to 2009. Statistics from Bureau of Immigration and Overseas Employment in Pakistan shows that as many as 4.2 million Pakistanis have employed abroad from 1971 to 2007, while the estimated stock of Sri Lankan in overseas employment was 1.6 million, and it was around 19% of the total labor force in the country in 2007. In the year 2008, the total number of Nepalese went abroad through official channel for foreign employment, some 266,000, which makes a good sense of high flow of labor migration from the region. What is the relation between migration and HIV? Although migration in itself is not a risk factor for HIV infection, but there are economic, socio-cultural, and political factors in the migration process that make migrant workers particularly vulnerable to HIV. Living under difficult circumstances, migrants are vulnerable to exploitation, violence, and abuse. Separation from families, communities, and social protection mechanisms, along with surrounding conditions and different life patterns in host countries, peer pressure, etc., push the migrants to engage in more risky behavior, including unprotected sexual practices. Gender relations and cultural norms of masculinity and femininity also greatly influence individual sexual attitudes and behavior, often placing them at greater risk of HIV infection. A recent study conducted by our organization in collaboration with IIM Dhaka shows that the migrants have low level of knowledge and perception on HIV/AIDS and STDs. They have their risk behavior and sexual practices among migrant workers. The research data shows that among departing migrants, 30% male and 43% female have no knowledge about HIV/AIDS, whereas 79% of returning migrants do not know any mode of HIV transmission. On the other hand, 11% of returning migrant workers had penetrative sex with girlfriends, and 21% had sexual relations with multiple commercial sex workers while staying abroad. But 51% returning migrants had never used condoms in sexual activity abroad. The study also found that 11% of returning migrant workers were infected with sexually transmitted disease. Among those, 4% were women. The major concern is that among the identified HIV/AIDS cases in Bangladesh, around 60 to 70% are either returning migrant workers or their spouses of spouses or children. Now, the challenges of migrants in accessing HIV services. First, health rights of migrants is ignored, is neglected in related policies and practices. Health is a holistic concept, but it is ignored in every stage of migration, pre-departure, post-arrival, and reintegration. Most host countries demand healthy workers, but they do not take responsibility in providing an environment for healthy living. Policies in most of the host countries do not favor migrants. Migrants are often portrayed as draining the host country's resources, including burdening the healthcare systems. On the other hand, in the bilateral agreements and MOUs, migrants' access to health services is absent. For instance, Bangladesh has a memorandum of understanding with 5 labor hosting countries, but none of which mentioned HIV and healthcare facilities of migrant workers. There are gaps between the provisions offered by the few appropriate policies and laws in place in favor of migrants in both the home and destination countries and their implementation. Sometimes there are contradictions between laws and policies of countries of origin and host as well. For instance, Section 7 of the Code of Conduct of Recruiting Agencies and License Rules 2002 in Bangladesh states that the recruitment agents must arrange the medical examination properly, but there is no clause or section regarding the procedure of medical testing, particularly of contagious diseases, including HIV. Second, migrant workers' health vulnerability and their specific needs have yet to be completely factored into the national HIV/AIDS planning and strategies, either in the host countries or in the countries of destinations. For instance, to date, there has not been any focused intervention, prevention program designed for migrant workers in Bahrain and in the United Arab Emirates. The National Committee for Prevention of AIDS in Bahrain addresses a variety of activities and constituencies for their own citizens, as so to only the nationals in the UAE. In Lebanon, the medium-term planning undertaken for the period of 1995 to 2000 identified a number of at-risk groups, including travelers and migrants. Therefore, they imposed an act for compulsory HIV testing of foreigners seeking a work permit in the national strategic plan. Other major destination countries in the Gulf and in the Southeast Asia, like Malaysia, Republic of Korea, Hong Kong, Special Administrative Region, and Japan, migrant workers are not incorporated in the national HIV/AIDS strategic plans and programs. Rather, they have restrictions on entry of non-nationals who have failed their health test and or have tested HIV positive. Surprisingly, majority of the labor origin countries in Asia, including Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Philippines, India, Pakistan, Nepal, and Cambodia does not cover migrant workers in the national strategic plan for HIV/AIDS. Indonesia is the only country in Asia which has recently incorporated migrant workers in their national strategic plan for HIV/AIDS. Third, since the health rights of migrant population is not guaranteed by the existing laws and legislation, migrant workers have hardly access to HIV prevention and care services in the host countries. Typically, the host countries' national AIDS programs focus on most at-risk population. They do not take into consideration the unique circumstances of migrant workers. Therefore, there is no effort to target the migrant workers in the delivery of health-related information and or HIV/AIDS education. There is no post-arrival program on HIV prevention and care information for the migrants in any host country, particularly in the Arab states. Thus, migrant workers fail to benefit from many national HIV preventive and care services and face great difficulties accessing HIV programs. Fourth, unethical practices of mandatory testing and forced deportation. As Romel has already mentioned, as I would like to just mention that no migrant workers tested HIV positive is given referral on what they should do upon return in their countries of origin. This is a missing link. Testing centers in the destination countries do not consider the health of a migrant worker their concerns once that person has left the country. In such a situation, the migrants fall in a vacuum situation when they're back home. They even cannot get access to the HIV services in their countries of origin because they are not oriented about their roles. Even they know their status, they try to hide them in fear of the stigma that they face in the destination countries before deportation. On the other hand, because of the practices of forced deportation, if the migrants know or suspect that they may have exclusionary condition, they make efforts to hide their status and to avoid contact with the health authorities. These are cases that people choose to become undocumented in order to avoid health tests. This has also profound consequences, as undocumented migrants are often out of reach of the healthcare system. The other challenges for migrant workers in accessing health services are lack of information, cultural differences, language barriers, isolated working conditions, undocumented status, etc. Finally, under the said circumstances, the following actions are needed to be undertaken. First, specifically address the health rights of migrant workers through bilateral agreements and MOUs negotiated between origin and host country's government to include migrant workers' rights with regards to health testing, including HIV and other infectious diseases, accessing to treatment and inclusion under insurance policies. Second, incorporate migrant population in the National Strategic Plan for migrant-specific HIV prevention and treatment programs, both in host and origin countries. Third, institute an independent monitoring system that establishes standards and regularly monitors both government and private facilities in their implementation of informed consent, pre-test and post-test counseling, gender and cultural sensitive health staffs, confidentiality of test results, and a functioning referral system for all migrants. And finally, discard HIV status as an exclusionary condition. Cease and desist in the practice of forcibly deporting HIV-positive migrants to prevent the further stigmatization and marginalization of migrant workers living with HIV. And finally, let's join our hands together to ensure migrants access to HIV services. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shatil. Our next speaker from Senegal is Ms. Fatou Maria Drame, right? Okay, she has a PhD in health geography and is currently an assistant professor and teaches health territorial inequalities at the Gaston Berger University in St. Louis, Senegal. She heads the research program of ENDA, Sante, and the international NGO based in Senegal. Several years of experience in the field of HIV and, has given her a lot of insight in terms of the researches that she has conducted on the mobility situation in West Africa.
Fatou. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to share here some preliminary results of research and field experiences on cross-border mobility in West African region in an HIV context. So this is the outline of the presentation. First, some consideration on West African mobility. Second, some issues on cross-border mobility and care-seeking. And last, a discussion on key challenges and one example of civil society response to these challenges. To introduce this presentation, two key points. In the literature, the link between mobility and migration, mobility or migration on and HIV, is made by showing how mobile or migrant people are drivers for the HIV epidemic, and by analyzing how these populations are more at risk or more vulnerable. The objective here is to analyze how mobility is used or not used to improve access to services and information. So there are different kinds of mobility. Here we focus on the residents mentioned by interviewees to analyze their mobility. West African mobility is old and permanent. Since trans-Saharan trade in the Middle Ages up to contemporary structure like ECOWAS. West African mobility is known as selective, mainly concerns young men, but more and more women and fragile populations are involved. This mobility is facilitated by cultural similarities in many countries, same language is spoken, family relationship, etc., and by communication infrastructure like telephone, roads. Some illustration of this. The first one is a series of four maps which show the evolution of road coverage from 1960 to 2006. You can see how connections are facilitated with only one example of infrastructure here, road. The second illustration emphasizes the fact that, in the contrary of what is heard, the greatest proportion of West African migration is happening within the West African region. You can see here some illustration also of mobility between Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. So an intensive mobility in general, what about mobility in a context of care-seeking? We took an example from two HIV services in Ziguinchor, a southern region in Senegal. Ziguinchor have borders with Gambia and Guinea-Bissau. The first service, the black one, is the health center of Bignona, which offers antiretroviral therapy. And the second service, the yellow one, is what is called the Pétaya of Ziguinchor, one of the main ART services in the south. So we can see that 6% of Bignona patients come from Gambia, when 10.5% of Ziguinchor patients come from Guinea-Bissau. When we have a look at the link between gender mobility and HIV, knowing that in the three countries, women are at least 2 times more infected than men, one can note that this mobility for health concern more men than women when the distance are longer. But this information needs to be confirmed by further investigation. Some determinants of this mobility for care are the unbalanced quality and accessibility of ART services in the context of different prevalences. This makes some services more attractive regardless of their geographical situation. Other determinants are also communication facilities, family relationship, and seeking for confidentiality. Some key challenges are identified for an effective response. Insufficient development of multi-actors partnership across borders, lack of knowledge transfer and information sharing, and not effective cross-border platform between these countries. Finally, just 3 more slides to move forward action. To address some of these challenges, a project is implemented since mid-2008 by Enda Santé and its partners like Red Cross Luxembourg and Ministry of Health of Foreign Affairs, of Luxembourg. This project has a double strategy. First, an inter-country response implemented by national NGOs. The focus is made on vulnerable groups in countries where the political context is very hard and in border areas. Many activities are developed, prevention, treatment, and psychological support, etc. After 2 years of activities, more than 5,000 sex workers, female sex workers, have access to care for STIs, have access to VCT, access to support and HIV treatment, and have access to condoms, mainly with a mobile approach. Knowing that in some countries like Cape Verde, this is the first project targeting vulnerable groups such as female sex workers. More than 300 persons living with HIV have access to treatment and care in Guinea-Conakry, in a political and social context which causes the departure of many international NGOs. And many health services are supported in the capital and in border areas for welcoming and treating groups, vulnerable groups and persons living with HIV. Second strategy of the project is an inter-country response. This allows a rapid scaling up by mentoring the NGO and facilitating experiences, sharing, and information circulation, and the development of innovative strategies across borders. So, to conclude, we can say that mobility is an expression of social network and an expression of care opportunities. So it needs to be analyzed by taking into account gender. The definition of research allocation needs to be discussed and adjusted. And last, intervention in cross-border areas need reinvention of HIV strategies like multi-focus strategy or multi-level strategy. Thank you very much for your attention.
After listening to a series of presentations on how migrant work the situation of migrant workers as they migrate, we now move on to see what happens when they return home. For this presentation, I'd like to call on Ms. Malu Marin. She's my executive director from Action for Health Initiatives. She has also represented our network, Coordination of Action Research on AIDS and Mobility, or CARAM Asia, in a lot of conferences, and she has worked on the area of migration and health for a decade now. Malu?
Thank you, Mara. My presentation is going to focus on return and reintegration, and it's really going to look at what happens to migrants when they return to their countries of origin. In the context in Asia, and some of you may be familiar with some of the issues I'm going to present and some of the data, mandatory testing among migrant workers is required as a pre-departure requirement and also as an on-site requirement. In many countries now, they do require post-arrival testing. So what happens is that sometimes migrants get deported upon their entry because they're found to be HIV positive. So it results to denial of entry, employment, and stay. In the Asian region, there are an estimated 55.6 million migrants, representing almost 30% of total migrants in the world. And the top three sending countries are China, India, and the Philippines. There's continued incidence of HIV cases among migrant workers, especially in some Asian countries like Philippines, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Indonesia, Nepal, and India. And in 2008, the AIDS Commission report noted that migration and mobility are among the driving factors in several of Asia's HIV epidemics. What are the conditions of HIV-positive migrants when they return? So we look at the economic situation. First and foremost, because they're migrant workers and they do go abroad to work, they are declared unfit. So they're no longer able to apply for any work permits or licenses to be able to work. And this is almost in all the countries. Now, for instance, in the Gulf countries, majority of them require HIV testing. In Asia, countries like Malaysia, Singapore, Taiwan, Korea, they all require HIV testing to be able to work. And in the home countries, they lack local employment opportunities. So if they've gone abroad for so long, it will be very difficult for them to find local employment. Some of them have different skills already that they learned abroad. So when they return home, the skills cannot match what are the opportunities back home. They lack savings or their savings get depleted because of their HIV status. There are no reintegration programs in place. And there's high cost of living and health care. Oftentimes, they don't actually have insurance, no? Because when they work abroad, they have access to insurance only when they're employed. And after their employment, they're no longer qualified to have insurance or to avail of insurance. At the social level, there is a fall from grace. We all know that migrant workers really work abroad mainly to support their families. So what happens is that when they return home and they're infected with HIV or any other sexually transmitted infection for that matter, their relationship with their partners or spouses and children get affected. And the family expectations of economic support render them, with so much difficulty because they cannot meet these expectations. There's social stigma and discrimination from their peers and their communities. We've known of migrants who have returned home because of being HIV positive, and they've not gone back to their families. So they stay away even if they're already in the country of origin. There's isolation, marginalization, and inability to disclose, and there's self-policing in terms of social relationships. At the psychological level, and we are also familiar with this, feelings of depression, suicidal thoughts, anger, resignation and fatalism, and self-blame, especially if the spouse or the partner is also infected. We've had several situations where we had to deal with couples who are infected, and sometimes also the children get infected if the female spouse or the partner gets pregnant. There's fear of being found out and stigmatized, and there's constant fear of the future, especially for the children. And this really has to do with their inability to provide for their families. In terms of access to treatment and services, it's often a factor of the circumstances of their return. So how they return affects their level of access. If they get deported as a result of compulsory testing, it means lost opportunity for interventions and referrals, mainly because there's no counseling when we talk about mandatory HIV testing. So they don't get properly referred. There's stigma and discrimination. And being a positive migrant is a source of shame. In some countries, for instance, in Indonesia, we know that when we had work with our partners in Indonesia, that HIV-positive migrants would rather identify as some other most at-risk population, that they'd rather identify as MSM or IDU than identify as migrants. And what happens is also this renews calls for compulsory testing. If more migrants are found in the system, and the unfortunate consequence is that there will be calls for them to be tested when they return home. There are no specific treatment programs for migrants because the citizens, when they go back to their countries of origin, they fall within the national HIV program. And many of them actually are unwilling to return because of fear that the treatment may not be available. My organization receives calls from migrants abroad, and they often inquire about availability of services in the Philippines, particularly treatment. In one particular call that we received, she was a migrant from Israel, and she said that they're actually getting treatment, free ARVs in Israel. And so she was asking, in the Philippines, is this available? Can we avail of ARVs when we return? And we said, well, first line maybe, but if you're taking second line, third line, possibly not. So that's the state of treatment that we have in the country. So what are the main challenges? When we talk about returning migrants, it's not only access to treatment or services that we're dealing with, but we need comprehensive and sustainable reintegration programs. And this also applies not just for HIV-positive migrants, but for all returning migrant workers. So we need to look at the economic reintegration, the social reintegration, the psychosocial and mental reintegration, as well as treatment access. And in some cases, the different regimes of treatment is also a problem. There is a need to address community preparedness towards returning HIV-positive migrants, especially since most of these migrants will want to return to their own communities and to their own families. But if the communities are not prepared, it's going to be very difficult. And in low-prevalence settings, for instance, like Philippines or Bangladesh, it's not very easy because of stigma and discrimination that's still prevalent. So what actions do we propose? We need to support the formation of positive migrant support groups, if needed, to build their capacity and facilitate the scaling up of their involvement in the response. We need to integrate migration issues into the national HIV response, particularly when it comes to undertaking prevention efforts as well as treatment care and support services. We also need to pursue regional and global action to address issues of deportation of HIV-positive migrants and access to treatment care and support. Thank you, and we enjoin you to support migrants' rights to health.
And our last, but definitely not our least speaker, is Dr. Enrique Barros. He is an epidemiologist at the University of Porto and is also the National AIDS Coordinator of the Ministry of Health in Portugal. In Lisbon in 2007, he was responsible for getting together the national AIDS program leaders of Europe to discuss issues on migration and HIV. Dr. Barros.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to present you in a certain way a possible other side of all these discussions. But a first word of caution is necessary because we are not mainly talking about real best practice. Unfortunately, in this area, we don't have the typical public health evidence-based knowledge that we'd like to have. Trials are very difficult to do, so what we always have is experience that seem to work better than other. If we try to overcome something, we need to know the barriers. And as has been already presented this afternoon here, major barriers have to do with language, cultural characteristics, religious beliefs, the lack of appropriate services for those that need them, and mostly fear, stigma, and discrimination that tend to change all the picture. And at least seen from an European point of view, it's quite obvious that we lack the profiles in terms of epidemiological description of migrants and mobile populations. We have already some information, but it's not comprehensive. And we know that migrants, especially those that we can call undocumented migrants, tend to be less present among HIV people on treatment, and they tend to present higher rates of treatment failure. These are some of the concerns that we need to face from this point of view. Let me just present you two slides describing some of the information we gathered in Portugal, surveying something like 1,500 migrants, some documented, some undocumented migrants, mostly from the African Portuguese-speaking countries, but also from Eastern Europe and from South America, especially Brazil. And as you can see here, when you ask people where they would try to solve their problems if they found themselves to be HIV positive, their answers were exactly the same as the regular Portuguese citizen. They would try to find a healthcare center, a primary healthcare center, or a hospital. And when you ask them whom they look for to get information about HIV and AIDS, as you can see, most of them pointed to doctors and also a reasonable proportion said that internet would be a good option for getting informed. So this is a country-specific description, but you have similar situations in other countries, so we need to know where people like to have care and where they get information so that we try to overcome the barriers that can make difficult for them to find what they need. And if we look at the same Portuguese survey and we compare men and women, we find that the major differences regarding gender differences in defining or presenting barriers were waiting time. Most commonly, it seems that women lack time for many things more than males, which is in fact true because they have more heavier quotas of jobs and they have children to care and so on. And the healthcare providers were also pointed as a more important source of difficulties regarding the access to healthcare system by women. But anyhow, if you look to the what we can call the better or the good news, that one third to half of the these migrants said they didn't face special problems in Portugal. Maybe you don't know, but in Portugal, everybody's entitled to treatment and to health care, regardless of his or her legal status. So maybe that's why people don't feel so distressed with this. And also because many of our migrants speak Portuguese for historical reasons, which makes things easier, of course. But if you take a more general picture for everybody, we can say that the factors that restrict migrants' access to healthcare, mainly economic factors, work-related factors, transport and safety issues, and social contests. And we can, list the major issues like the cost of transportation, the cost of medical treatment, where it's not free, the loss of income that being admitted to a hospital or being on treatment implies, difficulties at the workplace, and a major solution that is being tried anywhere, but also in Portugal, is try to involve the enterprises as part of the solution. But also fear of facing the police when people is not on a regular situation, or the problems of violence that definitely increase the risk of infection. We have been talking about testing as a threat to human rights, but now we can look at it as a right in itself. And migrants have the right to know if they live with HIV infection, and we need to provide structures that are mostly culturally and friendly. And it's this is an example from a Kenya experiment where lay people was trained as counselors, and rapid tests were performed in many different places. And this can be a solution in many host countries. And finally, how to face problems with antiretroviral therapy. Antiretroviral therapy is very, very expensive in European countries, at least in my country. It's very expensive. And the problems of discrimination, the problems of fear can, of course, be present when we deal with this situation. So the best practice is to have a national health system that do not differentiate people according to their migrant or not migrant status. But if you don't have it, or if it's not available, at least we need to guarantee that the fact that someone is a migrant is not precluding him to get access to treatment. People should be advised to use some extra pills in the pockets, because, as you have seen, one never knows what can happen, and it's better to avoid the situation. Heart treatment should be free. It's not, unfortunately, in many countries. But even in countries where it's free, some prophylactic measures, some of the needed medications like statins or other medications, people have to pay at least partially those medications. So that's an additional issue. There should be trained health care staff, as you have seen in Portugal. People complain of the way the health care staff deals with the situation. And there should be specific guidelines to deliver treatment to migrants. Of course, we should arrange for avoiding language and communication problems, like having professional translators in healthcare centers, peer educators, visual information for those that are unable to read the local language, and whenever possible to provide information in the patient's own language. And of course, provide peer support and try to eliminate every exclusion criteria for HIV. Migrant, to be a migrant, it's not an exclusion criteria. Finally, we should be more flexible in giving follow-up appointments to migrants, more flexible in the places where treatment can be obtained, and especially eventually provide art where the migrants work and live, namely using directly observed therapies. But always being secure that confidentiality problems are prevented, and that people is not going to have an additional problem because they have they disclose or they have to disclose their HIV status. These are some major kind of a list of a good practice things that everywhere and adapted to the local regulations we can always try to put working. Thank you very much.
We have about 10 minutes for discussion, so if you have questions, please approach the microphones. There are two microphones along this aisle. Please state your name and which country you come from, and please address your questions specifically to any members of the panel. Other questions, clarifications, comments? Yes, please. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can I speak Russian? The translation.
Can somebody translate for you? I'm sorry. Do we have somebody from the audience who can help us translate for this gentleman there?
Who can help me translation English Russian? Translator. This can.
Oh. Can somebody? Oh, good.
Я могу по-русски говорить. I can of Russia, да?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Проблема мигрантов, проблема межстрановая, межконтинентальная.
The problems of migrants, they are between countries and they are international problems as also.
Существует ли опыт межстранового или межконтинентального взаимодействия в реализации программ по обеспечению мигрантов медицинскими услугами и участвуют ли там организации или объединения людей, живущих с ВИЧ?
Do programs exist between countries, between two countries and on the multinational level, programs who help HIV and AIDS patients, where these groups are involved in this coordinated programs between countries or on an international level.
Так как я представляю объединение людей, живущих с ВИЧ, Восточной Европы, Центральной Азии, вот нам интересен такой опыт, есть ли он?
I'm very interested in knowing this because I'm interested in knowing getting an answer on this question because I represent a group of people living with HIV/AIDS in Eastern Europe.
Does anyone from the panel want to respond? I think the question is whether there are programs that exist between countries of origin and countries of destination that help facilitate programs for migrants living with HIV or people living with HIV. Anyone want to respond? Would you like to talk about initiatives in the ASEAN?
Okay, it's a very limited experience from the ASEAN region. So the ASEAN region is composed of countries in Southeast Asia. There aren't currently any existing or very specific programs bilaterally between countries, but at the regional level, there are many discussions that have started with regards to addressing issues of migrants and providing the continuum of care, so from origin and destination. There's nothing very concrete. At the moment, it's all discussion and principles about how countries can cooperate together. But concretely, it has not been translated into programs. So that's what I can say for now. There are certain countries in the region, for instance, Thailand, which actually has quite a progressive undertaking, you know, with regards to addressing migrants, because Thailand has provided support for migrants within Thailand for ARVs, for example, if they're registered and documented, and you know, so they fall within the system. But of course, there are many limitations, and they've had cross-border relationships, for instance, with Cambodian authorities, with Burmese authorities, and also with Laos. But these are sort of really small-scale efforts, sometimes province-to-province negotiation.
Thank you, Madhu. Dr. Barros?
In the European Union, there are some programs. Well, if a migrant is a documented migrant, then he can travel around. But there is a Northern Dimension program. It's mainly the Baltic countries plus Finland, Lithuania, Estonia, Germany, Ukraine, Poland, where there are some projects of trying to deal with cross-border migrations and with mobile populations among these countries. But there is really a lack of solutions for things like situations like, for instance, undocumented migrant from Africa or Asia or whatever, living in a country where he has full access to therapy. If he moves to a second EU country, for instance, that has not the same policy, he completely loses all his rights. So it's something that needs to be discussed and solved, even in the EU space.
I suppose it's a big gap in terms of responding to the issues faced by migrant workers in terms of HIV and AIDS, the lack of concerted efforts between countries of origin and countries of destination. Are there any more questions or comments? Going? Okay, let's synthesize the panel discussion then. From what I've heard this afternoon, it seems that I find it very unfortunate that although migration or mobility is a fundamental right of every human being, people who migrate actually see their rights being compromised in the process. One such right that has been mentioned, that has been discussed in this panel, is their access to healthcare services and information, including HIV-related programs. And this has led to their vulnerability to HIV. And unfortunately, when migrant workers become infected with HIV as a result of the lack of programs directed at this community, they are either detained, they are arrested, or they are deported without benefit of counseling or medical services, without proper referral and endorsement. Governments of destination countries simply refuse to allocate resources to cover HIV-related services and programs for migrant workers, denying the fact that migrant workers actually contribute a lot to the economies of these destination countries. On the other hand, origin countries or the home countries of migrants either lack resources or programs to directly combat these problems. At the same time, the existing stigma and discrimination that surrounds either HIV and AIDS or migration itself makes it harder for migrant workers who return home with HIV to access these services. Looking at this scenario, it seems that we have a very bleak situation. But it seems that we also have a lot of actions that are being undertaken at the moment to try to respond to these issues, and these actions include advocacy at the national and regional international levels, specifically what Peter's group has started to do in 2008, which is to try to remove HIV-related travel restrictions from the policies of a lot of destination countries. We have seen inter-country efforts that has been shared with us by FATO in West Africa. We also have looked at integration of migration as an issue in national AIDS responses in various countries, one of which is the Philippines. and it is being replicated in several countries in Southeast Asia. Dr. Barros has also shared with us innovative ways of making sure that services can reach migrant workers without compromising their employment in countries of destination. Capacity building is also one of the solutions that has been mentioned to make sure that either migrants are able to assert for their rights, and on the other hand, the service providers are able to understand the issues faced by these communities, which then hopefully would lead to better provision of services. And I suppose one important aspect of all our programs that we should not forget is to make sure that migrant workers be involved in our programming, whether at the origin countries or destination countries. And we have to push for the right of migrants to be involved in programs that affect their lives. So I'd like to thank our panel. Please give them a round of applause. And thank you very much for our wonderful audience for staying with us despite the heat. We'll see you around. And if you have energy left after today, there's a march. There's an AIDS march happening this evening, so we hope to see you there. Thank you very much.